Zone. This is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
We are live from Edley's Barbecue in Sylvan Park, and we are open here at Edley's. Stephen Godfrey's already in line, getting some brisket, ordering up. We've got the specials going today. The brisket burnt ends, the special today here in Sylvan Park. 615-737-1045, our number. And we go to St. Thomas Sports Park. Kevin Byard will join us in about 15 minutes. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel just announced he has been named the Tennessee Titans Walter Payton Man of the Year, and now he's previewing this Sunday's matchup against Cincinnati.
Really good awareness, and I think that's, you know, he's taking the coaching. I think, you know, we all want to impact the quarterback, and we want to get sacks and quarterback hits. And, you know, Jeff has, you know, kind of realized, like, if he's not going to get there, or maybe, you know, they stop him or they're double teaming him to get into the throwing lane. And, you know, even on the one that he batted that Jaron caught, like he jumped, like he wasn't just standing there, like he was able to get up off the ground and, you know, impact the throw and end up being a huge play for us in the game. So I think that's just something that they're working on. I know that you know, Big T works with those guys, obviously, about, you know, technique and fundamentals and just being able to find ways to affect those throws that come inside.
Appreciate it. Gentry?
Yeah, Mike, as you look back on some of the issues you guys have had on third down defensively, what's kind of been the common theme for that? Has it been, you know, something you guys aren't doing, something the other guys are doing? I mean, it's kind of gone wrong there.
You know, we look at the self-scout. There's a lot of different things that are showing up, you know, and it's zone, it's man, it's different. It's different down in distances. You know, so we just need to continue to work, focus, you know, make it an awareness. You know, we're working it today, you know, to get 11 guys to execute the call, whichever one that may be, working together with somebody. You know, if you're a man and you have to combo, you've got a pass rush game, or you've got a, you know, place where you need to be, getting there and being able to find ways to win. Winning the rush and being able to challenge or to break. You know, we're close. You know, I know that doesn't mean anything, but when you're tackling them at the sticks, or, you know, you get up there on third and four, and you know you got a zone, and they try to run a man beater, and you know, the receiver is able to fall forward for an extra yard, or, you know, they. Again, it's just challenging and making sure that we're sticks awareness and we have an idea of what they're trying to do based on the formations that they're coming out in and how we could impact the quarterback.
Teron?
You mentioned formations they're coming out in. The Bengals, as you mentioned yesterday, a lot of empty sets. With that spacing and those series of in-breaking routes that they run, what does that do with the defense? Like, how do you have to defend that?
Well, again, you have to play inside out. You have to play to your leverage sometimes. You know, they'll pivot back out, and, you know, they're in empty some, you know, third down. That's something that shows up. Not a ton. You know, I mean, I would say that more empty shows up on normal down and distances, Teron. But, again, we'll have to be prepared for it whenever. Usually that the rush comes out. You know, what check are we making? Are we playing the call? So, you know, they like to see what the picture looks like for the quarterback, and, you know, sometimes he'll check those routes to what they want to get into.
And then with the quick back shoulder throws that Burrow is hitting with AJ Green, what's the coaching point for your corners to defend it?
Well, you know, we talk about playing the ball. You know, I mean, we talk about not looking back till you're in phase, and Malcolm had a close one. You saw, you know, it was an emphasis last week about, you know, playing the ball down the field. And I don't think he was in bad position. Unfortunately, I think what everybody and what I would like them to do is make it consistent throughout the league is that, you know, if you're not playing the football, that your margin for error goes way down. So I think that, one, you have to play the football. Well, the other thing that comes up with that, Teron, is when you play the football and you look back, you know, sometimes there is a little bit of a hand that gets put on you and the ball is thrown, you know, on that back shoulder. So that's the game you play, you know, with them and those routes down the field. I think being challenged, finishing, you know, I think one thing that we talked about was being able to finish. Ward had one last week in the end zone, looked like a touchdown, and, you know, he continued to fight and finish through it and knock the football out, which I think AJ Green thought it was a touchdown, and you know, Ward finished. So, you know, that would be a huge emphasis.
David Beauclair.
Right, Khalif Raymond only has 3 fair catches on punts this year. Have you guys encouraged him to be aggressive in making that decision, or is that just his natural approach to the job?
I think that's his natural approach to life. I think he's been, when you've been cut as many times as Khalif has, and you played at a small school, you've got an edge to you that, you know, you want to be aggressive. And, you know, he, you know, again, the kickoff last week is something that we have to clean up and make sure that we're all on the same page. But he is, his aggressiveness has been good. I mean, they're protecting those guys a little bit now. I think that those guys are protected with the defenseless receiver. That was a new rule that they added this year. That may have given him a little bit of comfort to be able to catch those and to try to do something with it.
What's your sense of how difficult a decision that is for a guy in terms of whether or not to fair catch or not, and how much time you have to do that?
You know, it's fast, it's violent. I think that there's just a clock that goes off in your head. You know, I think that they take a peek. But I think that there's also a trust factor that goes into it with our vice guys, with our holdup guys. And we have, at times when we're performing, done a pretty good job with those guys to make sure that they're not down there in his face. To hit a big return, you're going to have to make one of those guys miss, you know, and to break a tackle or two. So we have given him some space, and hopefully that's increased his confidence level in catching those things.
Paul.
Mike, congratulations on the mood. It's terrific. You do such a good job with the timeouts at the end of the game. I had asked you about the one on Monday. You only used one at the end of Denver. Jacksonville, you didn't need them. Minnesota, you didn't need them. Then you get to the end of the Houston game, you need the penalty, and you need all 3 of them. Strategically, are you just busting it to have them in case, and then, you know, some situations you don't need them at all, and some situations you need them plus something creative?
Right. I think we talk about this all the time, our operation and our ability to not have to waste those in the second half, of how critical they are and showing the team how critical they are. You know, when the New Orleans Saints have 6 seconds and 1 timeout at the 50-yard line, and they go down timeout and win the game, you know, that sends a great message to the team how critical they are. It came up last week in the Buffalo game. There was 7 seconds again, 1 timeout before half, and Buffalo executed the down timeout against the Jets. And, you know, we'll show those guys that play tomorrow. And so then I have to make a decision. Okay, we're getting down on the play clock. You know, what's the down and distance? What are the probabilities that this drive is going to lead to points? Do I burn a timeout knowing how critical they have been in the past and in the end of the game for us?
That's Titans head coach Mike Vrabel speaking with the media. Coming up, we'll chat with Titan safety Kevin Byard on the Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
This is your home for the AFC South's first place Titans.
Into the end zone, touchdown, Titans! Go, Titans win!
The Zone.
Live from Edley's Barbecue, Sylvan Park today. Glad you're with us on the Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. pleased to be joined on the phone by the Tennessee Titans Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. It's Kevin Byard. Kevin, how are you, man? Congratulations.
I'm doing well. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So I know you've been doing the football camps, didn't have that this offseason, but this past offseason you were named the spokesperson for the United Way in Nashville. And now to get this honor, what does it mean to you?
I mean, it means a ton. I mean, I set out a goal for myself when I made it to the NFL that I was going to try to give back as much as I possibly could. And obviously I have more on the way. Me and my wife and our foundation, we have some Thanksgiving stuff going on, some Christmas stuff as well that we haven't, I mean, we started, but we haven't obviously made it happen yet. But, I mean, it's just a huge honor. I mean, we have a lot of great guys on our team, guys that give back to their communities, not even Nashville, but even their hometown. So it would just be an honor to represent the team for the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee.
That's terrific. Everybody's not surprised to see you
right.
Get that. So congratulations. Football-wise, heading to Cincinnati, here's another team with an offense that presents a challenge. You've seen some rookie quarterbacks in your day. What's your feel for Burrow at this stage and what he's doing this early in his career?
Yeah, I've definitely seen my fair share of rookie quarterbacks, but he's probably one of the best, if not the best one I've seen on tape. I mean, the guys, I mean, he just threw for 400 yards. So you throw 400 yards in this league, you're doing something right. I mean, he has commanded the offense. He has some good receivers that he can throw it to. A.J. Green, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins coming on as well. Some good running backs out the backfield. And, I mean, it's just a great team. I mean, obviously their record doesn't show it. But, I mean, I think out of their six games, I think they have been, like, less than 1 point. Or they've been in pretty much every single game, probably except for one that was the Ravens. But, like I said, I mean, the confidence level is very high. He's going to go out there and be resilient and try to do whatever he can to give his team an opportunity to win the game at the end. So we're going to have to go up in Cincinnati, man, get ready for a physical game and a dogfight.
Obviously, the status of the defense, the third down defense, has been a big subject of conversation. You're 5-1 despite it. And I'm struck by what Kansas City did last year. They had a change of coordinator also. And their defense struggled early. Now, they changed systems, too. It was more extreme than what you guys have gone through. But they gradually got better as the season went on, and obviously were good enough to be a championship defense. And I wonder if you might see the potential for some parallels there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, third down has not been great so far this year. And I've actually used that comparison beforehand, just talking about how Kansas City – their defense may have not been looked at as one of the best defenses in the league, but by the end there were. They just, I don't know if a switch happened or something like that, but they just start playing better. And, you know, Mike Vrabel talks about it all the time, but, you know, the teams that continue to improve throughout the year are going to be teams that's going to be there in January and February. So that's going to be our main objective throughout the rest of the year, continue to improve. There's nothing we could do about the third downs in previous games. The only thing we could do is try to be better this game and make sure that we get off the field on third downs, because honestly, I think that's going to be the key. You know, we're going to continue to win ball games.
Kevin Byard, our guest on the Midday 180. I know whenever the team was 4-0, you said, look, we haven't done anything. I'm paraphrasing there a bit, but you said that there's no reason to look at 4-0. But I'll ask it to you from this way. The team has been off to slow starts and finished strong in recent years, and now at 5-1, taking advantage of the early schedule, how can you take advantage with a strong finish? I mean, there has to be a focus there now that you have the strong start that we've all talked about for years.
Yeah, it's just all about improvement. I said it before, you know, 5-0 wasn't nothing. We haven't accomplished anything. We can't really look at our record and say that, hey, you know, we're going to be a favorite to win a division. We're going to be a favorite to, you know, win the AFC or win the Super Bowl. You know, we just have to continue to improve because, you know, as far as the defense, and that's the only thing I can really concern myself with, we're miles away from where we really want to be. So as long as we're coming in here every single day and trying to improve and just thinking about ways we can get better, if it's third down, red zone, being better in the run game, being better in the pass game, just every level of our defense, you know, I think we'll be where we need to be towards the end of the year. So that's our only focus, just continue to improve.
you have not necessarily been the same player. You have not necessarily been asked to do the same things. There's a different cast of characters in some parts of the secondary than there have been in previous years. There's different strains on the defense than there has been. Is that fair? Is that a fair assessment, Kevin? And what do you think your game looks like as compared to what it's looked like the last couple of years?
I mean, honestly, I think the only thing that you can really take away from anything I'm doing this year and previous years is just the ball production numbers. I think I've been asked to do a lot in this defense, whether it's cover man, play underneath zone, play deep cover two, cover one safety. I'm still doing the same things that I was doing in previous years. The ball production is not there right now. But at the end of the day, I've been close. I've been around the ball every single game, having, you know, not having a lot of targets, but still having opportunities to get around the ball. So the way I always look at it is if, you know, as long as I continue to run to the ball, playing with great effort, being good in my man coverage, being good in those things, you know, the ball production will eventually show up. Don't know when, but it'll show up. I'm not really concerned about that, but I'm just concerned about trying to be a leader. And I've talked about this in previous interviews. You know, if I finish the year with zero interceptions and we have a winning record, we win the division, make it to the playoffs, I'm going to be just as happy as I had when I had eight interceptions. I've been able to accomplish those things in the NFL. My main accomplishment and my main focus is trying to be a leader and winning ball games and trying to win a Super Bowl. That's my main goal.
This defense, though, has been opportunistic. You know, the turnover ratio has been tremendous. What helps this defense be around the football so much? And you mentioned you're around the ball, but the defense as a whole getting takeaways.
Yeah, I think guys are just, you know, taking advantage of opportunities. You know, we're getting some tips. Obviously, in this last game, we had about five or six PBUs that popped right in the air. We got a few of them, but we should have had more. But I think guys are just taking advantage. Malcolm's been having he caught two interceptions in the Buffalo Bills game. I think Imani Hooker is a guy who's been coming in there, you know, in sub packages and different things like that. But he's been taking advantage of his opportunities. A guy who plays very hard. But yeah, you have the rookie Christian Fulton who had his interception early in the year. But I think it's all about, you know, it's the rush. Guys getting hands up, affecting the quarterback, and guys are making plays in the back end. So, and honestly, our offense has been doing a great job of taking care of the football. So as long as we continue to do that, being good in the turnover margin, we know we'll continue to win ball games.
It's been a while since you've been on a road trip. You've been playing at home and had the bye week. Does it feel as long as it's felt for us?
Yeah, it honestly does. I was just thinking about it the other day. Like, I haven't, like, thought about the clothes I'm going to wear for the plane, like, in a long time. It definitely feels like a minute. But, you know, it's going to be a challenge. Like you said, we kind of got comfortable being at the house, staying in our home hotel for, you know, a few weeks. So, you know, we'll be able to get back in our groove and getting on the road and being able to go, you know, beat the tough team on the road. So it's going to be a fun, just a new challenge every week.
Some rough times came out of that last one. You guys now programmed to be hyper aware. Not that anybody's going to be sick or test positive, we hope, before this one. But I know protocols have changed and everything. Is there now a super heightened vigilance as you get on a plane, go to hotel rooms, get on buses?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hyper-awareness definitely started once we was able to come back into the building. I think, obviously, with the protocols that have changed, guys have just been more aware. I mean, obviously, you've been seeing around the NFL, man, it's been guys testing positive pretty much almost every day or every other day around the league, from coaches to players. So I think it's heightened awareness around the whole entire league. And I think, you know, our playing, you know, like you said, the away game protocol is going to be a little different because, I mean, we obviously haven't been on the road for a minute since it happened. So this is going to be something new. I think we're going to have, like, assigned seats on the plane, you know, stuff, you know, similar stuff like that. So, I mean, but I think even the last away game, I think guys in Minnesota, I think guys did as best they could trying to adhere to the protocols. It just was an unfortunate situation, and we had the outbreak. So, but, you know, we'll be looking forward to it.
Who do you not want to be assigned to sit relatively close to on a plane ride?
Who do I not want to be sitting close to? Let me think about that. I'm not sure. I would say probably Daquan and the boys, because those guys are usually, like, you know, having fun playing card games in the back of the plane. Not gambling, nothing like that, but just playing card games. And they're usually pretty loud. You know what I'm saying? It gets pretty competitive. So especially on coming back home from a game where you're pretty tired and you may want to take a quick nap, it's almost impossible sitting in the back of the plane. But no, I wouldn't say there's anybody in particular that I can think of. Maybe Ben Jones, maybe one of the bigger guys. You know, I usually like to stretch out. I usually try to get, like, you know, a whole row or something like that. Yeah. Try to, you know, put my legs out or something like that. So if you're sitting with a big guy, that's probably not going to happen.
I was thinking you'd answer a snorer. I was thinking that is automatically who you wouldn't want to be near.
See, Kevin, Paul comes from the perspective, you put him in a car or on a plane, he falls asleep quickly.
And I might be that snorer.
I cannot sleep on a plane. I don't sleep in cars. Like, I don't know where you fall in that category, but no, Paul's asleep immediately.
Honestly, it doesn't matter if it's like, I don't fall asleep going home from the game, but going two games, I can't stay up on a plane. It could be a 45-minute flight, I'm going to sleep. I don't know. I just can't stay up on planes. It's just, I just take a nap immediately.
I respect it. Before wheels are up.
Exactly. Like, I'm going to sleep. I'm not about to just stay up. I know guys like to watch movies and stuff. I just can't do it. Go right to sleep.
Hey, congrats again on the Man of the Year nomination, and we appreciate the time as always.
Appreciate it, Paul. Thank you, man.
All right. Kevin Byard has been our guest. Yeah, he is the nominee for the Titans. He is the Tennessee Titans Walter Payton Man of the Year. And now he's a nominee for all 32 teams, and that is announced. I still believe it's announced at the NFL Honors.
Yeah, night before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's right. Hopefully they get to do that.
It's a huge deal. They've finally gotten some attention. It was him, right, that got the weekly NFLPA award early this season. I'm pretty sure it was Kevin. And it was the first time a Titan had been acknowledged by the NFLPA for one of those things like that I can ever remember. I said something about it.
For what exactly?
The weekly honoree for like the,
I had no idea.
Community action person of the week. And I said, these guys never get involved, acknowledged for that. And it was either Pollard or Nate. I think it was Nate Washington that was like, you're not kidding. Like, talk about a rarity. Titans just are it's one of those things they get blinded by or get overlooked for.
Clay Travis, who will join us momentarily. On the show, what did Vrabel have to say towards the end of his press? Because he was in a good mood.
Yeah, he came on and announced he was in a good mood, and then I said in the chat, Burton kind of said, hey, I haven't been on in a while. I'm glad you're in a good mood, and I put in the chat thing. Like, everybody compliment him on a good mood. But people thought I was being sarcastic because I always say, like, nobody say congratulations after the good game. It's a waste of time. And then Burton apologized, but I was like, no, I'm serious. And then I don't know if you heard my question, but I congratulated him on being in a good mood and told him how much I enjoyed it. So he was in a much better mood as compared to yesterday's comatosity, if you will. I'm trying to think. I'm working on a story about the timeouts, so he was talking about that. He said, penalty-wise, 732 offensive holds last year in its entirety, 188 so far this year. He said he hasn't done the math, but it's going to be glaringly not called.
And that's been a specific adjustment from the officials this year for sure. Clay Travis joins us from OutKick, presented by the Home Loan Expert, Ryan Kelly, homeloanexpert.com. Clay, I hope you're doing well, man.
I am doing well. How are y'all?
Doing well. Paul just mentioned the offensive holding is way down. Points are way up across the league. I'm curious how that has affected some of your top picks when it comes to your weekly picks against the spread.
Well, it's slowed down now, but the early impact was that overs were hitting at like a 60% rate if you're a sports gambler. And so that was obviously pretty incredible to have a success rate of that level. But lately, the numbers have been adjusted such that it's harder and harder to be able to win in that magnitude. But it still is pretty crazy, honestly.
Clay Travis with us. Clay, what would you do with UT's quarterback situation? The bye week is here. The expectation is Garantano is going to be the guy. Is that the decision you would make?
Well, I think that it gets into the question of what are you trying to do this season. If you're trying to get ready for next year, I don't think Garantano is the guy. If you're trying to get to 5-5 or maybe an outside chance of 6-4, then I think Garantano is the guy. The positive is we were up. I was up with Chad and a couple of buddies. We were up in Alabama for the Alabama-Tennessee game. And I think there's a good chance Tennessee is going to get one of the top quarterback recruits in the nation, Ty Simpson, to be involved. And
he told us the story about how he interrupted Ty Simpson.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Withrow, who is an ultimate Tennessee fan. Ty Simpson's a big fan of mine and a big fan of Outkick. So he came to the tailgate to just meet me and wanted to get a picture and talk. And I knew his name. I didn't know what he looked like. But yeah, Withrow, like we're talking about the recruiting and what that's like and how he's going to make his decision and things like that. And Withrow just comes parachuting in, completely cuts off the conversation to introduce me to somebody. If Ty Simpson goes to Clemson or Alabama, you can blame Chad Withrow for interrupting that discussion.
Yeah, he'll be all over the VolQuest message boards. I lean towards seeing what they have in some of the younger players at the quarterback position, especially this season when, you know, Pruitt, I understand you're playing to win, and Garantano gives them the best chance to win. But also, he's already got the contract extension. You know what you have, and you clearly don't know how good the younger players are, so why not rotate more of the freshmen in right now?
Well, I think the question is with Harrison Bailey, really. I think there's enough of a sign that J.T. Shrout and Brian Moore are not the guys. And so it's basically, to me, between Jarek Garantano and Harrison Bailey about whether or not they think Bailey is in any way a quarterback of the future.
Clay Travis with us from Outkick. What in regards to what happened in the World Series with the COVID-19 and Justin Tucker, what has been your reaction? What's been the national reaction on Fox with the decision for him to come out and celebrate after the fact and the way Major League Baseball has responded?
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised Major League Baseball is going to respond in an angry way. I mean, first of all, I think Major League Baseball deserves a positive because they managed to finish the season. And there were a lot of people who said, oh, my God, there's no way you can play baseball outside of a bubble. It's impossible. And Major League Baseball had all 30 teams finish. They had a lot of difficulties along the way, especially early with the Miami Marlins, St. Louis Cardinals. But I think they set an important precedent about their ability to play a sport during a time of difficulty, obviously, with the pandemic going on. And so, but with the Justin Turner situation, I mean, to me, the bigger story than Turner being out on the field for pictures is how in the world do you have a testing process in place where you can find out that somebody tested positive after the games have already started? That's the more interesting part, especially when there's only two teams to test. They found out one test was positive in the second inning and another test was positive in the eighth inning. Well, how in the world can you not get day of testing, morning of testing done when you've reached that point in the season where there's only two teams playing the World Series? And I actually think Major League Baseball got very lucky that Blake Snell was pulled, because if not, if the Rays go on and win Game 6, then you're talking about potentially having to sit out for a week or more until Game 7 is played.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about Major League Baseball is upset that he came back out and disregarded whatever protocols in place to go celebrate after winning a World Series. But at the same time, they got test results back in the second inning and didn't remove him from the game until the sixth. So, like, if you're following protocols, what's he doing remaining in the game for that long?
Well, I mean, I think they probably require, because there's so many false positives, which is a huge flaw of the testing process in general, and we've certainly seen that exposed by sports, that they don't want to overreact based on an initial positive, and so they need a confirmation of the test in order to believe that it's an issue. But I just don't know, and I'm not an expert in what tests are being applied, but I know last week I was at the White House, and before I could go interact with all the West Wing figures, I had to pass a test, and it took an hour for them to conduct that test. So if I can get tested and the media can get tested every day at the White House and it can be done in an hour, I don't understand how it's not possible elsewhere for the same thing to happen.
Because of the positive test in the World Series and the fact that they've moved the teams to the quote-unquote bubble there in Arlington, do you think the NFL looks at that and thinks, yeah, maybe the playoff bubble isn't necessarily the route to go?
Yeah, I mean, who knows what the NFL is going to do from a playoff bubble perspective, but it's a lot harder to get NFL teams. I mean, they're much more, the analogy I always use, the football team is like an aircraft carrier. A basketball team or a baseball team are a lot closer to a speedboat in that the amount of gear you need in order to play games for both teams is substantially less than the NBA and Major League Baseball. The amount of space that the entire team takes up when they travel and all of those things. So I think for football, it's a lot more complicated. Not to mention, football, you're only playing one game every week. So you have a lot of time to fill to have people inside of a bubble to play one game. So I tend to think the NFL is probably going to stick with the policy that they have in place right now. We'll see what happens. I think the latest team to have an issue is the Giants right now. If I'm not mistaken, yep. They've got some guys who may have an issue. But I think what the NFL is likely to do is just eliminate the bye week between the AFC and the NFC championship games. And I've been told, based on TV people I talk to, that if necessary, the NFL could easily move the Super Bowl back. I mean, I think the biggest challenge for the NFL is what happens if you've got, let's say, Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady both set to play, because I think that's the two best teams in football right now. In the AFC, still the Chiefs. In the NFC, I think it's the Bucs. What happens if Brady and Mahomes both test positive a day or two before the Super Bowl and aren't allowed to play, and you end up with Blaine Gabbert against Chad Henne? Is the NFL really going to not have those guys play? I think this is significant, too. So far, there isn't a single trace of evidence of anybody getting infected from playing football, right? I mean, you might get infected from being in the training room, from being in the meeting room, things like that. But in terms of one guy tackling another one or something like that, there has not been a single evidence of that happening. I don't think in any sport, contact or otherwise.
Clay Travis with us from OutKick. And when we come back, we'll discuss the positive tests at Wisconsin and the Big Ten leaving themselves no room to maneuver games with 8 games over 8 weeks. We get Clay's take on that and the fact that they're not allowing Nebraska to play UTC, even though Nebraska wants to play this upcoming week. We'll get Clay's take on that and much more straight ahead. But first, Clay, tell us about Ryan Kelly and the great work he's doing.
Yeah, look, I mean, mortgage rates have never been lower at thehomeloanexpert.com. 30-year rates, 15-year rates, we're not far to a couple days from Halloween. And right after Halloween, what happens? It is Thanksgiving season, but more importantly, Christmas holiday season for everybody out there. The amount of presents you're going to have to buy, the amount of money you're going to have to spend, if you've been considering it, now's the time. Rates have never been lower. You can knock off hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars from your expenses. Why not make a smart financial decision? Get hooked up today.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Coming up tomorrow morning.
On the next J Mart and Ramon, we talk to the VOT, the director of the upcoming Music City musical, Mike Keith.
Man, I'll never be able to live that one down.
Not a chance, because we are petty.
And we'll also be joined by a man they call Razor, Titans linebacker Rashawn Evans.
All that plus probably some hip-hop desserts and saltiness, all on the next J Mart and Ramon.
The Music City musical.
Jason Martin and Ramon Foster. Tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 on 104.5 The Zone.
We are live from Edley's Barbecue, Sylvan Park, Midday 180, delivered by Edley's. Edley'sBBQ.com, the website. The brisket burnt ends are on the way. That's the special today. You can find Edley's 12 Southeast Nashville and here in Sylvan Park. Clay Travis remains on the line with us, presented by TheHomeLoanExpert.com. Clay, the Big Ten, no room to maneuver games with 8 weeks to play 8 games. What do you make of the decision to not allow Nebraska to play, regardless of what's going on with Wisconsin? And what does this signal for their season? What could this mean implication-wise for Ohio State and others down the road here?
Well, the Big Ten has blown this on so many different levels. But first of all, I think the decision not to allow Chattanooga, which passed all virus protocols and everything else, to play a game against Nebraska is unfair to Nebraska and also not ideal for University of Tennessee Chattanooga. And, the larger scale issue here is I feel good about the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 finishing their season. For instance, in the SEC, 36 out of 38 of the games, I believe, assuming the games are going to happen this weekend, which there hasn't been, unless something's happened in the last 45 minutes, there hasn't been any suggestion that's not going to happen. Assuming that that happens, the SEC is well over half of their games, still with an extra week, and still with a lot of teams with bye weeks where they have some flexibility. So that is pretty good. The Big 12 and the ACC have similarly had to postpone, but almost none of them have had to cancel conference games. We just saw happen with Wisconsin on the road against Nebraska. And so I think it's just a fundamental failure of the Big Ten. They should have started playing earlier in September. They should have had bye weeks built in. And as a result, if I'm an Ohio State fan or a Michigan fan who's holding out hope that we could finally beat Ohio State this year, I'm looking around not as concerned about the regular season as I am the question, are we going to play enough games to be able to be considered for the college football playoff? And I'm not sure what the answer to that's going to be, because it feels like this is unlikely to be the only game that gets canceled this season.
Tennessee sports gambling is scheduled to start Sunday. How big of a moment is this? Can you put this in perspective for where we're headed with all this?
Well, look, I mean, I have said for a while that I believe there are a few transformative moments in sports in terms of what it's meant to the way that sports are talked about among, you know, friends and family. And the first would be cable, because for those of you out there who are my age or a little bit older, you remember when every game that you wanted to watch was not on television. I'm old enough to remember listening to John Ward call Tennessee football games on radio because they were unavailable to be watched on television anywhere. As we age, there are fewer and fewer people who can imagine that ever being the case. But cable transformed the landscape and added far more people to the overall audience available for television viewing. And you add in television viewing fantasy football, which happens around, you know, the rise of the internet, where fantasy football suddenly became easy to do, and the NFL viewership exploded in conjunction with fantasy football because it gave everybody a rooting interest in every game, and it made the entirety of the NFL schedule must-see television. And then I think sports gambling is going to be the third transformative event of the last, you know, 35 or 40 years, two generations of sports, because what it will do is, one, just bring a tidal wave of cash into the universe of sports. It'll take it off the back alley, and I think what it'll do is get a lot more people who hadn't been gambling. Look, the television ratings for our sports gambling show are surging. I think we've grown more this year than any sports television show on television on any network. And I think our show is good, but I think it's just a sign of way more people being in states where sports gambling is becoming legal. And so there's more interest in sports gambling talk, much like you saw the rise of fantasy sports talk. I think it's going to be hard as things get more and more integrated for there not to be regular discussions about the point spreads, the over-unders, and individual wagers about touchdowns and whatnot. And I think in the state of Tennessee, starting on Sunday with, I think it's FanDuel, MGM, DraftKings, and Action 24/7, people are going to have four options out there to be able to gamble from their phone. And I think it's going to be pretty awesome for everybody.
I'm worried about your bookie. What's the status of his medication? Does he have another career plan? What's going on with him?
Well, yeah, the bookie, my bookie is I think he's basically decided that he has to retire because because I've gotten more wealthy, made more and more money. So, I mean, he's gotten to share, much like my wife, he's gotten to share in my my income stream growing.
So he beat this thing. He narrowly beat the clock.
Yeah. And look, I mean, the upside of all is, and this is, I don't think, any great surprise. I mean, they're going to be, I think there's going to be a lot more money in sports media in general. And I think that's good for sports fans out there who want a lot of good content, because much of sports content now is advertiser supported, and you know, you got beers, you got car insurance companies, mortgage companies, like all these places that reach sports fans. the number one advertising category I would anticipate is now going to become sports gambling.
Yeah, bring them on.
Clay, tomorrow night, I unfortunately, I know Chad can't make it either. We're calling a high school television game tomorrow night, but you have your Halloween extravaganza, and I'm curious what you will be dressed as.
I am, so my wife decides the last several years we've had a couple of costumes. So last year we were Jon Snow and Daenerys. The year before, we were Macho Man and Randy Savage. This year, in honor of the election festivities, I am Uncle Sam, and she is the Statue of Liberty.
Nice.
Okay.
What about the boys?
The boys are, that's a good question. My youngest is obsessed with Minecraft, and I'm not smart enough to understand how the Minecraft universe works, but he is a character from Minecraft. My 10-year-old is going to be a werewolf, because he's gotten into werewolves lately. And, my 12-year-old, I'm not sure that he's officially committed, to a costume at this point.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of on that borderline where he'll turn 13 in January. I'm not sure if he thinks he's too cool to go trick-or-treating now.
Yeah, it's sad to see him right at it's not cool anymore age. And the late commitments, they come in. They're like these undecided voters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they'll be.
Yeah, we're gonna
they'll
be going. Look, I think that it's going to be a good time. Like, we're excited just to be able to see a lot of people. And I think Halloween is, I think it's the most fun. I know people, Christmas, Thanksgiving, all those things. July 4th is a lot of fun, too. But I think just in terms of pure fun, without any of the stress typically of travel or expense of cost, you know, like, you're not spending a lot of money on a costume compared to the presents that you have to buy for your kids or family members or whatever, and the stresses that come with that. For adults, I think Halloween has become by far the best holiday of the year.
Have fun with it, man. Sorry we can't make it, and we'll chat next week.
All right, sounds good. I'll see you guys.
Take care.
All right, Clay Travis, presented by thehomeloanexpert.com. He goes big. You know, Wycheck used to have it
the comparable size.
Oh.
I haven't been to Clay's yet.
But I think Frank would go, like, more into the costume. Like, it was more.
Well, he became the Hulk one night. I mean, I think you're, if that's what you're getting
I am, yeah.
He turned into the Hulk, and his sheets turned green.
615-737-1045, our number. If you don't mind, when we come back, Kirby's sitting over here today, and there's two challenges that I've been asked about on a guessing game for him. I'm not doing it today. I just want to pose it to him to see if he would take on this challenge. My guess is yes. We'll ask him this when we come back. Also, yes. Some big headlines. Titans discussion, and your phone calls. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
The Titans are back on the road against the NFL Draft's number one pick, Joe Burrow, and the Cincinnati Bengals. This isn't LSU, Joe. You play for the Bengals. Kickoff is Sunday at 12 noon on your home for Titans football, 104.5 The Zone.